Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, the Ohio State Fair opens soon, and we'll hear all about the new features and old favorites fairgoers can expect this year. And there's now an official wild school in Central Ohio. Jay Fox will have more on what that's all about. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective, as the song from the famous musical goes, our state fair is a great state fair. However, I think in Ohio, we are the only ones allowed to say that. The Ohio State Fair is coming, and we're joined today by Jess West, the public information officer for the Ohio Expo Center and State Fairgrounds. It's a busy time for you, isn't it, Jess?
You are certainly right, Kate, but thanks so much for having me on.
What are the dates of this year's Ohio State Fair in case anybody doesn't have it on their calendar yet?
Of course, the dates of the fair this year are July 24th through August 4th. So you have 12 days to come to the Ohio State Fair.
And there is a lot to do in those 12 days. You'll probably want to be planning extra trips. Tell us about some of the new features coming this year to the fairgrounds, entertainment-wise and otherwise.
Absolutely. So as I'm sure you're very familiar, we have rotating entertainment in our Celeste Center. So every night there's a new ticketed concert for shows like Alabama, Stone Temple Pilots, Boys to Men, Steven Sanchez. We have a Lizenda Norteña concert this year, Lauren Daigle, and so many other great performers. So our Celeste Center concert series is really, really wonderful. We also have some new free entertainment throughout the grounds included with the price of admission. So we have a new Nerveless Knox Real show, gigantic sway poles with people all the way on the top performing. These great performers were featured on America's Got Talent season 17 and just absolute daredevil stunt artists that will certainly take your breath away. We also have some agricultural themed entertainment this year. So in the doghouse, which has grown very popular over the past couple of years, we have the Marvelous Mutts, which are performing rescue dogs. They're so great. They're so cute. Such a wonderful show. And such impressive dogs. But we're also adding a new show to the doghouse this year, which is Sheepdog Spectacular. So incorporating agriculture a little bit into the entertainment side. So there's going to be live sheep, live dogs, you know, showing you how dogs herd sheep. But there'll be some fun interactive portions of that as well. We also have some new strolling entertainers. So not everyone has to go sit down at a stage or at an attraction to see entertainment at the Ohio State Fair. You can be walking across the Mountain Dew Midway or walking down the food highway and see strolling entertainers walking down some different bands. You might see somebody telling fortunes. You might see some different performers walking around. Be careful and look out for the amazing giants. They're large stilt walkers walking around in amazing costumes. Stop and take a picture with them. So we have a lot of great entertainment this year. We also added a stage in our Taste of Ohio Pavilion and Beer Garden. So that's in the three pavilions on the south end of the grounds. And there's going to be a stage in there with different acoustic acts that are rotating every night. So if you are someone who is looking to enjoy some free live music, I would absolutely encourage you to head down to that acoustic stage on the south end of the grounds.
Now, I also understand, Jess, that this year there's a new exhibit focusing on the history of the Ohio State Fair, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a Ohio State Fair history exhibit happening in Kasich Hall C. And so we have all of these great models of the Ohio State Fairgrounds dating back to the 1800s. So kind of a nice little time capsule of what the Ohio State Fair looked like when we first opened on the Ohio Expo Center grounds back in the 1800s. And there's a series of a few of those that, you know, kind of follow the grounds and its evolution over the past, you know, couple hundred years. And it's really great to see that evolution. So this is the 169th Ohio State Fair. There have been a couple in there where there were years that, you know, the fair couldn't happen for a variety of different reasons, but there's been so much history that's happened and a lot of, you know, maybe renovations or changes or updating and things like that that have happened to the grounds over those years. And so it's really fun to look back and see what the grounds looked like when we first got here versus what they look like today.
Jess West is Public Information Officer for the Ohio Expo Center and State Fairgrounds. The Ohio State Fair kicks off for 12 days of fun on July 24th. We've talked about concerts. We've talked about the Ohio State Fair History Exhibit. How could we have waited this long before I ask you about the Butter Cow? Do we have any word yet on who will be joining the Butter Cow in that display case?
Kate, that's a great question. And I'm going to say that that's one of the Ohio State Fair's, well, not even the Ohio State Fair, the American Dairy Association Mideast best kept secret. So they handle all of that. It's a great partnership we have with them. And I find out what the Butter Cow theme is the same time everybody else finds out about it. So it is in the process of being made. And I am just as eager to find out what that is this year as everyone else is.
Fascinating. I also understand, in addition to a couple of new art competitions, there's a People's Choice Award, and that fairgoers actually can participate in sort of some of the judging, right?
Absolutely. So you don't have to be an art expert to participate in People's Choice voting here at the Ohio State Fair. We have some People's Choice voting that goes on our creative arts, youth arts, fine arts areas. And so that includes, you know, different cooking and baking, different art pieces within fine arts. We also have a new mural competition this year. So there are going to be artists on the lawn of the Cox Fine Arts Center live painting murals for a couple days of the fair. There will be a People's Choice voting element to that. So you can download our app, vote for, you know, the different pieces that really dazzle you at the fair, and hope that who you chose wins the People's Choice Award.
I always enjoy, partly because I can go inside and have a little break and some air conditioning, but also it's so fascinating to see all of, like, the baked goods that people have brought and had judged, and then they're on display in a case. The other fun little, I think it's a hidden gem of the Ohio State Fair, I discovered during my very first visit, was the Tablescape competition. I believe that has something to do maybe with 4-H or one of those organizations, but people get really into designing a table and setting it and decorating, and it's so much fun to look at those.
Those are magnificent. I love the tablescaping competition. The amount of work and attention to detail that goes into tablescaping is absolutely amazing. I wish that I could take a couple of those tables and plop them in my home to make it look like, you know, I have that level of attention to detail.
I'm glad to hear we're kindred spirits, because everybody I talk to about the fair, I say, don't miss the tablescapes. It's so interesting.
You're so right.
I appreciate you saying that. Now, tell me about tickets, where to get them. Are there any deals if I buy my tickets early? All that fun stuff for the fair.
Absolutely. So we do have advance sale admission tickets on sale through July 23rd. So the day prior to the fair, you can get admission tickets for $8. And those are available on Ticketmaster. And those are fee-free tickets. So truly $8 tickets. We also have them available printed tickets at participating O'Reilly Auto Parts locations throughout Ohio. So you could get, you know, in printed tickets at O'Reilly locations. We also offer advance sale admission on our Midway Ride All Day wristbands. So that's a $3 discount on those. And those can also be purchased by going to ohiostatefair.com.
The rides, the entertainment, the food, it's all there. It's all in one spot. And it really is a great outing for the family, for maybe a date, whatever. Get your friends together and go to the Ohio State Fair. Jess, what's the website where people can get more information?
Absolutely. If you visit ohiostatefair.com, we have all the information you could possibly want to learn about the Ohio State Fair.
Can't wait. It starts on the 24th. Now, have we forgotten to talk about anything that's important here, Jess?
We do have special days during the Ohio State Fair, and we just really are hoping that everyone comes out and has a great time. We want all Ohioans to be able to experience the Ohio State Fair, to celebrate Ohio with us, and bring your out-of-state friends, too, to show them how great Ohio is. We're here to showcase all the great elements of our wonderful state, and we just hope that everyone comes out and really enjoys themselves this year.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
In Franklin County, New Albany Intermediate School was recently dedicated as a wild school site. New Albany is the 210th wild school site in Ohio and the 15th in Franklin County, and Sarah Schott, from the Ohio Division of Wildlife joins us to tell us a little bit more about what this means. First of all, we know that fifth graders are fun and they can act out, but wild school doesn't mean behavior. What does wild school mean?
Yes, correct. Wild school sites are a fantastic thing. They are an extension of what we call Project Wild, which is an initiative to get teachers and educators talking about wildlife and wildlife habitat. And a wild school site is a place used by students, teachers, in many places, even the members of the community, as a place to really learn about and benefit from wildlife and the environment. And one of the critical components of a wild school site is it provides wildlife habitat. It could be acres and acres of wildlife habitat, or it could just be the smallest of portion. And one of our greatest kind of talking points about our wild school sites is no matter how big or small property you have at your home or your school, it can be critical wildlife habitat. And that is really what we're about promoting. And our wild school sites, most of them are in fact schools, but they can also be libraries, community centers, anywhere where people go to learn or engage in activities.
Now, when we talk about wildlife, are we defining wildlife as animals, plants, and natural resources, or just one of the above?
You know, all of them. When we talk about wildlife in particular, we do talk about any animals that live out there in the wild. So when I'm telling, you know, fifth graders or kids about wildlife, I talk about any creature out there that lives in the wild, takes care of itself, and it doesn't rely on people to take care of it like our dog would or our cat would at home. But in order to have wildlife, we have to have wildlife habitat. We have to have plants and water and all these other things to make sure that they are surviving. So when we talk about wildlife in particular, we are talking about the animals, but without the plants, the shelter, the food, the water, they wouldn't exist. So we really talk about wildlife and wildlife habitat together, which is what these wild school sites look at.
So if I'm a student and my parents are choosing which intermediate school to send me to, what does this designation mean for students?
Yes, it means that they are having a hands-on learning opportunity. It's giving them this opportunity to go outside, leave the classroom, go out there and observe wildlife, look at wildlife habitat, different types of wildlife habitat, and really spend time out there and begin to understand it. Because in-classroom learning is very important, and we can learn a lot of different things in the classroom, but sometimes you have to go out and you have to experience these things. So these wild school sites are giving the opportunity for these students to experience that, allowing them to connect with nature, and a lot of times really instilling this environmental stewardship at a very early age. When we see that kids are having this connection with wildlife, when they're given the opportunity to care for it, to understand it, it really changes their hearts and minds and how they think and feel about nature. And as they grow into adulthood, they carry those experiences from their childhood with them, and they make actions that are benefiting wildlife. They're more conscious about how they're treating the environment, and that leads to a better world for us and for the future generations.
So when it comes to the teachers, do they have to be specially trained, or are these just tools that recruit teachers that have an interest in the subject matter?
Yeah, so many of the teachers who have chosen to really push for these wild school sites or have them instilled at their school, they have really shown that they prioritize that wildlife and the wildlife habitat. They have a particular interest in the environment. In order to teach the Project Wild curriculum, which the Project Wild or the wild school sites are an extension of, they do have to go through a course to be certified in Project Wild and get a better understanding of how to teach their students about wildlife. So some of them do have that special certification and do go beyond what their normal expectations as teachers are. But these wild school sites, they give those teachers the opportunity, whether they have a special certification or not, these wild school sites give them the opportunity to go beyond the classroom and really get their students connected with nature. And it really just shows how much passion these teachers who take these wild school sites and take the initiative, it shows how much passion they have with their students and how much passion they have for our environment.
So the Ohio Department of Natural Resources is celebrating its 75th anniversary this year. And I'm wondering if these programs will impact choices beyond school. For example, do you think that these programs will encourage kids to go into wildlife or make different collegiate choices as a result of their experience?
Yes, yes, they certainly can. And if you talk to people who work for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources or Division of Wildlife or any of these agencies in conservation, you'll find that a lot of people, when you ask why have you chosen the career you've chosen, a lot of them have some sort of answer that ties back to their childhood. Some of them will say, you know, I remember when a wildlife officer came into my school and talked to me, and I thought that they were just so cool. And they have these experiences that are drawn from their childhood and affected the rest of their life. It determined what they went to college for. And so something just as simple as this wild school site can have those inspiring moments and inspire entire careers. And it gives them the opportunity to discover something that they might not have had the opportunity to discover elsewhere. And they might fall in love with it. And who knows, this might steer them towards a path that changes the environment, creates entire new opportunities for us as people to care for our world. But regardless of the career that somebody chooses or the path that they go down towards college, we can all choose to do good stewards of the land. And that is how environmental change happens. It happens when all of us work together. And so in the large scheme of things, that's what the purpose of this is. But these simple wild school sites can just change entire lives and really expose people to nature, spending time in the outdoors. It can change the way that they pursue college and the classes and the majors that they decide to pursue.
So what did New Albany Intermediate School have to do to get this designation?
Yes. So New Albany has been fantastic. They have been some really huge go-getters in the terms of wildlife habitat. One of their biggest projects that their students really took initiative to get going was to create a prairie, restore prairie habitat. Prairies are one of the most fastest declining habitats that we have in North America. And so restoring prairies, even small acres of prairies, are critical to making sure that we have pollinators to pollinate our crops and allow us to get food. So the students at New Albany and the teachers there prioritized having what they called the E3 Learning Lab that has been absolutely critical to getting students involved with STEM. And part of that extension has been creating this plant, creating this prairie. And, you know, while the teachers have done some of the legwork with the funding and the purchasing and partnering with different organizations, what I love most about this project is the students were the ones that were planting the plants. They were out there putting the native plants in the ground, learning about which ones to plant, learning about what pollinators would benefit from those certain plants. And then once those plants have become established, they did the second part that we really like to see for wild school sites, is that they went out, they used the habitat that they created to learn. So one of the things they do every year is they do a bioblitz, where they count how many animals they can find as many species as they can on their wild school site. So we really love to see those double components, that creating the wildlife habitat for wildlife, benefiting our wildlife, and then learning from it, becoming environmental stewards, and then taking that knowledge and carrying it with them. And that is truly what a wild school site embodies.
So good for New Albany Intermediate School, as they are now certified as a wild school site. Our guest has been Sarah Schott from the Ohio Division of Wildlife. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Attention is growing about so-called Project 2025. It's a nearly 1,000-page handbook that proposes a dramatic overhaul of the U.S. government. The handbook was created by the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank. Inside, there are calls for eliminating some federal agencies and moving many directly under presidential control. It also calls for doing away with the, quote, deep state bureaucracy by firing as many as 50,000 federal workers. And the playbook proposes rolling back protections for the LGBTQ community and infusing Christianity more deeply into society. The Heritage Foundation lists three main people leading Project 2025. All are former Trump administration officials. Despite this, Trump claims he knows nothing about the project, and he posted on Truth Social saying he disagrees with some of the things in the plan. Project 2025 says it is not tied to a specific candidate or campaign.
This is Jim at a party.
Dude, pass it. Hi there.
This is Jim making nachos.
Hi there.
This is Jim watching his favorite horror movie.
Oh yeah, definitely hi there.
And this is Jim driving his car.
Dude, not hi there.
Jim's making good decisions and not getting behind the wheel when he's high, because he knows that if you feel different, you drive different. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
The Republican Party platform includes a change in the way the party is addressing abortion. The RNC's platform committee moved to adopt the document that does not include language about a national abortion ban. The platform states, "We proudly stand for families and life. We believe that the 14th Amendment to the Constitution of the United States guarantees that no person can be denied life or liberty without due process, and that the states are therefore free to pass laws protecting those rights." As I said, it does not include a national abortion ban or give a specific week at which an abortion would be illegal. The 2016 Republican platform mentioned abortion 35 times. The 2024 platform mentions it only once in opposing late-term abortions. It also says they will support mothers and policies that advance prenatal care, access to birth control, and IVF fertility treatments. At a news conference in Columbus, Ohio Republican U.S. Senate candidate Bernie Moreno said this about the abortion platform.
It's predominantly a state issue, and we're going to work on ways to make certain that moms have better access to health care, that women have better access to contraception. There's not a Republican senator I know that's against any forms of the contraception that's reported in the media, and we're going to make certain that adoption services are more readily available.
Moreno has called for a federal ban on abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy and says he still supports that.
That's something that I believe, that I think we can get to a place where after 15 weeks, there's just some common sense restrictions.
Now, Moreno also told me during an interview on Face the State in March leading up to the primary election that he supports exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. Back in November, Ohio voters approved an amendment to the state constitution that guarantees the right to abortion and other forms of reproductive health care. Issue 1 specifically declared an individual's right to make and carry out one's own reproductive decisions, including birth control, fertility treatments, miscarriage, and abortion. It allows the state to regulate the procedure after fetal viability as long as exceptions are provided for cases in which a doctor determines the life or health of the woman is at risk. Viability was defined as the point when the fetus had a significant likelihood of survival outside the womb with reasonable interventions. Under Ohio law, abortions up to 22 weeks of pregnancy are legal. After that vote in November, Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown said in a statement, "Ohioans made it clear that women's health care decisions should be between them and their doctors, not politicians. That's what I've always believed and will continue to fight for in the U.S. Senate. My opponents disagree and have made it clear they would overrule Ohioans by voting for a national abortion ban." If you know someone living with Alzheimer's disease or dementia or someone who has died of it, you know how devastating the disease can be. It essentially robs them of who they are. The good news is researchers continue to look for treatments and cures and are making progress, and Ohio leaders continue to look for ways through legislation to help in the fight. The FDA just approved a new drug that could slow the progression of early symptomatic Alzheimer's disease. The drug is given in monthly infusions and has only been shown to work in people with very early onset symptoms of Alzheimer's. In a large trial, it slowed the decline of cognitive function overall by about 22% over 18 months. Doctors say the treatment is an incremental advance, but time matters.
And that may sound like, oh, what's the big deal? Well, that's a big deal if you have a wedding, something in your life, if you want to do something. We're not reversing it. It's not a cure.
You're slowing it down.
Slow the decline.
The drug is set to be available in just weeks. It costs $32,000 a year and is covered by Medicare Part B. According to the Alzheimer's Impact Movement, nearly 250,000 Ohioans over the age of 65 are living with Alzheimer's disease right now. Ohio has one of the country's highest rates of chronic conditions. In 2019, state leaders enacted Senate Bill 24, creating the first Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia's Task Force. And last month, the Ohio Department of Aging released an action plan out of that to increase public awareness, improve access to quality care, train a dementia-capable workforce, advance research, and optimize financial support for people living with Alzheimer's and other dementias. Also, just last month, the Ohio House passed two bills that advocates say will help those living with the disease. House Bill 397 would create a public awareness campaign to increase education and understanding of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. It would also use that information in public health outreach programs. House Bill 24 would set the stage for access to diagnostic advancements, such as biomarker testing, to reduce the time for diagnosis and therefore access to new treatments. The Alzheimer's Association says without this legislation, dementia diagnoses may take up to 2 years. Both bills now go to the Senate.
Within 15 seconds of logging onto social media, the algorithm has your daughter in its crosshairs. It sends her a steady flow of images telling her she isn't thin enough, pretty enough. They invade her brain, causing body dysmorphia, anxiety, depression, leading to the worst rates of eating disorders, self-harm, and suicide we have ever known. All while she's sitting right next to you on her phone. Congress knows, but it refuses to act. Don't let her suffer the secret pain alone. Use your voice. Demand a plan. Join us at the Center for Countering Digital Hate. ProtectingKidsOnline.org. Because it's up to you to protect your children from social media nightmares. Join us for her, for your daughter.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
If you know someone living with Alzheimer's disease or dementia or someone who has died of it, you know how devastating the disease can be. It essentially robs them of who they are. The good news is researchers continue to look for treatments and cures and are making progress, and Ohio leaders continue to look for ways through legislation to help in the fight. The FDA just approved a new drug that could slow the progression of early symptomatic Alzheimer's disease. The drug is given in monthly infusions and has only been shown to work in people with very early onset symptoms of Alzheimer's. In a large trial, it slowed the decline of cognitive function overall by about 22% over 18 months. Doctors say the treatment is an incremental advance, but time matters.
And that may sound like, oh, what's the big deal? Well, that's a big deal if you have a wedding, something in your life, if you want to do something. We're not reversing it. It's not a cure.
You're slowing it down.
Slow the decline.
The drug is set to be available in just weeks. It costs $32,000 a year and is covered by Medicare Part B. According to the Alzheimer's Impact Movement, nearly 250,000 Ohioans over the age of 65 are living with Alzheimer's disease right now. Ohio has one of the country's highest rates of chronic conditions. In 2019, state leaders enacted Senate Bill 24, creating the first Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia's Task Force. And last month, the Ohio Department of Aging released an action plan out of that to increase public awareness, improve access to quality care, train a dementia-capable workforce, advance research, and optimize financial support for people living with Alzheimer's and other dementias. Also, just last month, the Ohio House passed two bills that advocates say will help those living with the disease. House Bill 397 would create a public awareness campaign to increase education and understanding of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. It would also use that information in public health outreach programs. House Bill 24 would set the stage for access to diagnostic advancements, such as biomarker testing, to reduce the time for diagnosis and therefore access to new treatments. The Alzheimer's Association says without this legislation, dementia diagnoses may take up to 2 years. Both bills now go to the Senate.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Joining me now is Trey Addison. He is the Regional Director of Public Policy for the Alzheimer's Association in Ohio. Trey, first of all, thanks for being here
today.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
You know, as I mentioned, nearly 250,000 Ohioans, I believe it's just over 230-some thousand, have Alzheimer's or dementia over the age of 65. Is that number growing? What is the situation in the
state?
Sadly,
it is. It's growing. And it's growing in pockets of the state. What we call is sort of slower growth areas. So in Central Ohio, we've been blessed with a robust economy, a lot of jobs, a younger population. You have the Ohio State, which is right here. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you go to Southeast Ohio, Northeast Ohio, Northwest Ohio, those populations are getting older, and that's where we're seeing an increase in diagnosis. And that's a big challenge, particularly in those particular areas, because access to health care and quality care is diminishing because they're going more so to the big city. So it's hard to get a diagnosis.
So why does Alzheimer's Association feel that House Bill 397 is so important in the sense of raising awareness about the disease?
Yes, I think, Doug, it's a big deal because we have to get the word out. A lot of people, particularly in rural areas, urban areas, don't even understand what to look for when it comes to Alzheimer's and other dementia. We typically chalk it up in some communities to, oh, grandma's getting old, or dad's mm-hmm. just getting old, or they're just not remembering everything they used to remember because of age.
Yeah.
That's not correct. There's real issues. How do we educate the general public in the state of Ohio? What's going on with mom or dad? What does dementia even mean? What does it look like? That's the real aim and goal of House Bill 397. The other side of that is really engaging the Department of Health and the Department of Aging to put together a plan that they can go out now and execute in public awareness. Public awareness is critical. When you think about the new drugs and treatments that are coming down the pipeline, when you think about any other opportunity to slow the progression of the disease, mm-hmm. people have to be educated on the disease and know what to look for in order to take advantage of those resources.
And the other bill, House Bill 24, you know, setting the stage for access to diagnostic treatments. How would this bill help patients, people dealing with this disease?
House Bill 24, in my opinion, especially in the era of treatment within Alzheimer's, is probably one of the most critical bills in the state of Ohio and across the country, because these bills are showing up everywhere in most states. It's probably one of the most, I would say, critical bills that we're seeing, partially because if you can get a biomarker test that gives you a baseline mm-hmm. of, hey, you potentially have dementia mm-hmm. or you have Alzheimer's, now you can start a path to treatment. That is a big deal to the point that the doctor made earlier, is that if you can get on a pathway, you can salvage some of that loss. You can go to a wedding. You can go to those experiences that you may not get. Mm-hmm. You may have been robbed from that. So how do you start with biomarker testing? That's why it's critical. House Bill 24 is for the state of Ohio, at least, it was a challenge to get there, but I think we're in good shape as we go to the Senate.
Would that be something that, you know, even if somebody's not showing symptoms, but maybe they have the disease in their family, that they would get this test early on in life rather than when they first start showing symptoms?
Absolutely. It could be as simple as, there's research now on biomarker blood testing. You go get a blood test and it says, hey, here's what we're seeing. Here's what's showing up in your blood testing screen. Now you are on a potential path to treatment. A lot of people say, well, I don't want to know that I have it. But the reality is, if you know,
you can do something
about it. If you don't know, it could be worse down the line. So how do we get in front of this disease and not behind it, specifically in pockets of the state where we see an aging population and we can start to slow the progression of the disease?
We talked about the two bills. Now, we also mentioned the task force that was created, 5 years ago now.
Yep.
How crucial has the work it's done been in this effort?
I give kudos to Director McElroy with the Department of Aging and Governor DeWine related to the task force. Part of that work has laid the groundwork to where we're at in the state of Ohio. You had multiple bills that have gone through the General Assembly that came out of that task force.
Including these two bills,
but equally first responder training for first responders in the state of Ohio to get trained on what dementia is and how it shows up in communities that they have to go interact with the general public. That's a big deal. We've seen more resources flow, research dollars. That was a recommendation that came out of the task force. We see the state allocating resources to research, allocating resources to respite care for Alzheimer's caregivers. That is a big deal, and that's probably one of the more critical legislation that has happened in Ohio, and we're seeing the rewards of that and the fruit from that labor come out now.
You talk about public awareness and people not knowing, you know, what to recognize with this disease. If someone suspects something with a loved one, what should they do? How should they reach out?
The biggest thing, and I may be a little biased, but reach out to the Alzheimer's Association. It doesn't cost anything. Mm-hmm. But what it does is we help you navigate. Our programs teams help you navigate. Hey, here's what mom's doing. Okay, come in. We'll have a consultation. We'll have a conversation so we get a better baseline understanding. We don't recommend facilities. We don't do any of that. But we help you navigate the process. The other thing, too, is don't be afraid to go talk to your doctor about it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the critical functions that we'll be working on in future legislative sessions is how do we engage docs and nurses to start to have more critical conversation with patients. Sometimes doctors can say, I don't want to be the one to give them the diagnosis. Mm. That's a challenge. We have to change that narrative. If we can change that, we can help more people over time.
How encouraged are you by everything that's happening as well as the medical advancements?
I am more encouraged. I came to the association in 2019, so on the heels of the task force.
Yeah.
So we've seen the progress from 19 to 2024. I am more encouraged now than I was coming in because we didn't have a treatment. We were not in the era of treatment. We are now in the era of treatment. That is a game changer for people, for you and I, mm-hmm. and for people moving forward, because it's only going to get better as long as resources flow to the issue.
Yeah.
When resources don't flow, we just forget about it. But we've seen it in the state of Ohio, and like I say, Governor Wise leadership. We've seen the resources go there. We've seen people get impacted by that. And we see the General Assembly, honestly, taking a step forward. House Bill 397 passed unanimously.
Yeah.
That shows you every member of our General Assembly cares about this issue, which is critical.
And finally, how can somebody watching help in the cause?
Absolutely. I think they can reach out to go to ALZ.org. That website will help you navigate whether you're someone who's dealing with this issue on the front lines as a caregiver, whether you want to be an advocate. All of those things are at ALZ.org. We also have our Central Ohio chapter here. Vince McGrail is the chapter exec for this particular area in Central Ohio. His team does a phenomenal job in doing the day-to-day work and what I call, you know, really God's work in helping families navigate such a challenging issue. But I'm optimistic, and I think now we're in the era of treatment, so we're all excited about that.
Well, Trey, with what you've said today, I hope this really, you know, maybe helps somebody who's watching just to, you know, get answers, start finding out what's going on with mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or something like that. So thank you so much for your
Absolutely.
Time today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives. Today, we also face a mental health pandemic that threatens our well-being as we attempt to rebuild our social networks and communities.
The pandemic has reminded us to value family, community, and our human connections. However, it has also left many of us feeling more isolated, confused, and alone, struggling to find meaning amid loss and uncertainty.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges. But many of us do not understand what we are facing or know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you are going through, and we are here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health. If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org.
What? Dangers rarely lie out in the open, so no matter where you live, it's important to know harmful pests can hide in and around your home.
Here I come!
Rodents and cockroaches are drawn to food waste and garbage.
I know you're out here.
Ticks lurk in tall grasses, and mosquitoes lay eggs in standing water.
I can hear you.
Rodents, ticks, and mosquitoes can all spread dangerous diseases.
I gotcha.
Seek the facts you need at pestworld.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
Parenting is hard. Technology can make it harder. The Family Media Plan developed by the American Academy of Pediatrics helps make it easier. Go to healthychildren.org/media plan to create the media plan that's right for your family. Whether you make a full plan or just choose a few parts that matter the most to your family, healthychildren.org/media plan is an easy-to-use tool that will help your family set media priorities and create healthy digital habits in line with your family's values. You'll also get practical tips to help make the plan work. And you can come back to revise your plan as often as you need to, like at the beginning of each school year or during summer and holiday breaks. Raising kids in the age of screens is easier when you have a plan. Go to healthychildren.org/media plan and make your plan today.
Buying buses that run cleaner. The Central Ohio Transit Authority, or COTA, received a grant of nearly $23 million to do that. The money comes from the Federal Transit Administration and will pay for 10 brand new hydrogen fuel cell electric buses. That's different from a fully electric vehicle. Basically, the hydrogen fuel cell allows the bus to produce its own electricity. Representatives with COTA say their goal is to have a 100% zero emission bus fleet by 2035. They also say they will achieve net zero carbon neutrality by 2045. And this is becoming the new norm. Moving forward, representatives with COTA say the company will only buy zero emission vehicles.
So the buses that COTA is replacing have exceeded their useful life. They're old. And these new electric and hydrogen buses will ensure more reliable rides and result in far fewer maintenance costs. So that means more money in the agency's pocket, agency's coffers. That money can then be reinvested in service and in the communities that we serve.
The grant will also help build a new refueling station at the McKinley Avenue facility.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV. From the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS-FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM ESPN Columbus.